Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Alrighty, what's happening? Hour number two here on the show, Tiki and Tierney, company from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is more than a house. It's personal paradise. Get yours with Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. So we've got the Pro Bowl coming up this weekend. Golf on CBS. Real quickly, Tiger Woods did not start off well, Teak. A little wobbly out of the chute today. Mr. Woods had a six on the first hole, which obviously,
what?
Yeah.
Going
plus two, but he has found a way to stabilize things. He then parred four or five straight. And then he was able to birdie 6 and 8. So right now he is minus 1 on the day. He's minus 3 on the event. He's tied for 25th. That's Torrey Pines. Obviously, if you're a golf fan, I don't need to tell you this is a big event. You know, one of the bigger non-majors. This is a good event. The Farmers Insurance and J.B. Holmes is up there. Rory's up there. Rahm is up there. Our buddy Bubba. Bubba who? Bubba what? So we've got a nice leaderboard. Mickelson, I didn't see Phil's name, but I'll just give everybody the quick update on the Torrey Pines leaderboard, Farmers Insurance Open. You know, I came across a great article today, and I tried to tweet this out. It didn't work for whatever. I'll try again next break. But it's on CBSSports.com. 2020 Super Bowl gambling. Inside the process of creating more than 400 prop bets.
400. Didn't you tell me when I was in the Super Bowl in 2000 against the Ravens, mm-hmm. It was 2001 Super Bowl.
Yep.
Weren't there only like 20?
Oh, God. You know, Teak, it's so long ago.
I feel like you told me there was like 24 or something like that. There's 400 prop bets. Man.
I think I got it because back then, living in Vegas, I would go to the casino.
Yeah.
And I guess I put those at the Mandalay Bay. And, you know, as the story goes, and, you know, you've said this a million times, I hit 12 out of 13, which was nice for me. But I don't, that sounds right.
Yeah.
And what they were starting to do then, because you would always get the, and I guess NBC still had the basketball games, you know, the NBA on NBC.
Yeah.
And they would have like, you know, Kobe and Shaq total points versus combined rushing yards or whatever. And they still do that now. But now what they've done is, and I don't know how you possibly bet on this. You know, they have like what color Gatorade will be flushed over the winning coach's head. What?
It's impossible. What happens if it's water? Like, do you win or do you lose?
It's clear. I don't know if clear is an option. And how about this? This one is impossible to me. This one is not about the Super Bowl, but it's actually about Eli, who had a really classy, as expected, press conference today with the Giants as he announced his retirement officially. You can bet on whether or not Eli will ever make the Hall of Fame. Okay? But here's what's interesting about that. And I don't even have the odds in front of me. If he doesn't make it for a while.
Yeah.
And God forbid, you know, you perish or there's just too many things up in the air. I don't know if you can fully collect on that.
Yeah, you're sitting on that bet for a long, long time.
Yeah, you better have a Costanza wallet to protect it. Otherwise, the writing is going to get obscured, a little faded here. So, Tiki, you know, I know we look at the stars. That's the launch point. Who's the quarterback? Who's the head coach? Who's the elite running back and receiver? Who's the splash defensive end? Who's the lockdown, in quotes, corner? But in a lot of ways, it's the fringe players, it's the role players that set the template for the Super Bowl. So if I say to you, all right, Teak, take me off the radar just a little bit.
Yeah.
Which direction would you take us? Something that you think is really important.
Well, I mean, so let me start by backing up to what you're talking about. So there's an interesting scenario that's starting to develop when you look at this game and how to stop Pat Mahomes. So obviously you have to focus on Pat Mahomes. Like, is he the guy and, you know, what's he going to do? And if you're going to try to stop him, how do you stop him? Well, it's harder. It's easier said than done. Obviously, and a lot of people have tried this. We started our show kind of with this, and I'll drop back into it before I answer your question, BT.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why it's so hard to contain him is because he likes to scramble. And when he scrambles, all like protections and or all coverage rules, they break down. And so basically it becomes man to man. And so when you have Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins and, you know, Travis Kelce running around basically in man to man coverage, you're going to lose. Right. And so we said this, and you said this actually at the start of our show, the easiest way to slow down, because I don't think you're ever going to stop Pat Mahomes, is to contain him, right? Don't let it get to man-to-man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let it stay into whatever coverage you have to. But specifically to your question, we know that the secondary has to play a big role for the 49ers as it pertains to Pat Mahomes. So Richard Sherman is the obvious one. He's actually had a really great season this year. Their front seven's got to get to the quarterback and contain Pat Mahomes. But I really think a big piece of this for the 49ers are going to be their two safeties, Jimmy Ward and Tart, the other safety. Because what happens when you play like a coverage, let's say a zone coverage, it's easy for the safety to cheat. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, I think he's throwing this to the flat. I'm going to cheat down to the flat. But what the Kansas City Chiefs do is run a lot of, like, double-moved routes. And so it looks like he's running to the corner, but in fact he's running to the post. So when you cheat out of your position, he's now all of a sudden wide open. And so I think the safeties for the 49ers have to be smart in disguising what they're thinking about doing and not give it away. Because Pat Mahomes sees that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he sees you. He's good at he's like Peyton Manning in this regard. Like, he can manipulate you as a safety, like make you go somewhere that you shouldn't be, and then knowing that he's going to have an open route coming through that place, the space that you vacated, and then make a big play into that space. And so if there's one like place that has a deficiency in this San Francisco 49ers defense,
mm-hmm.
it's probably their safeties, because they sometimes cheat. And that's why they make some big plays. But Pat Mahomes will make them pay for that.
Sorry, so let me ask you as a subset to that, but not necessarily pertaining to this game, just in general, because I think some people might enjoy hearing your answer, including your partner. I want to see where you take me with this. When you talk about a young quarterback, or really any quarterback, but mm-hmm. the ability to really quickly diagnose coverages, you know, what's real and what's not. That's the huge impediment for a lot of the quarterbacks who never make it. Let's face it.
That's right.
Most of these guys, most of them, are 6'3", 220-ish, good arms, you know, somewhat accurate in the grand scheme of things. But the ability to really identify and diagnose what's in front of them and what's kind of a mirage is the separating factor for a lot of these guys. So is that something that, is that like natural intelligence? Is that just...
It's
an abundance of film work. Like, what makes it easy for some and tough for others?
Well, be honest with you, BT, it goes back to high school.
Okay.
Right? So back in, this started, I don't know how long ago, maybe like 15, 20 years ago. It certainly wasn't around when I was in high school, but it's now prevalent. These kids go to like these 7-on-7 like camps. It's like it's all they do is pass, mm-hmm. right? And it's all man coverage. Most of it's man coverage, and so they end up having to throw the ball in the tight windows and like read things really quickly in order to get completions, right? Because there's no pass rush, right? So you can stand back there, but you can't run, and so you gotta learn how to see things happen immediately, and not to mention they all have quarterback coaches, so they're like learning. Like these details that NFL quarterbacks learn when they're like 15 and 16 and 17. And so they get to college, they get to practice it a little bit more, and then they get to the National Football League. It's not foreign to them, right? So many of these quarterbacks that struggle, they're running these like non-traditional systems because they were, I put in quotes, like an athlete in high school. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to run the ball and you're going to maybe throw it to the open receiver that's running completely free because they thought you were running the ball, right? Those guys struggle when they get to the NFL. It's these other ones who have been, you know, reading coverages since they were 15 years old that get to the National Football League and they can recognize it. And Pat Mahomes is one of those guys. We saw this last week, BT, in the AFC Championship game where the Tennessee Titans we talked about this on Monday. Like, they were trying to disguise everything. Right, it looked like, hey man, this is cover one. There's everybody's up, like literally every defender is at the line of scrimmage. It looks like they're playing cover one. There's a safety in the middle of the field. There's a whole player, you know, sitting right in front of that safety. It's cover one. And then as soon as the ball snapped, it's like, dude, how'd they get in cover four? Right, some quarterbacks struggle with that,
mm-hmm.
and because they're assuming it's one, and all of a sudden they're throwing into this, like they're throwing their wide receiver open in man coverage, but there's a zone player sitting right there, and it turns into a turnover.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Mahomes has this ability to diagnose it really quickly. Like as soon as the snap of the ball, he sees where the safety goes, and he can diagnose, is this actually man or is this zone? And so I think he has a heightened IQ, to be honest with you.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I think he's got a good eye for it. And it's different than like the Peyton Mannings of the world, even the Tom Brady's, who would manipulate defenses with the dummy counts and the Omahas and all that other nonsense,
mm-hmm.
right? That was manipulation to get the coverage to get the coverage to declare itself. Pat Mahomes diagnoses it on the snap, and that's what makes him so good, right? He can see it right away. The challenge is his receivers seeing it the same time he is?
Yep.
Like that's where.
And sometimes I've noticed Tyreek Hill does not.
He doesn't. That's exactly right. Yeah. It happened last week. That's why he had that one drop or a couple drops he had. Well, actually, 2 weeks ago, he had the drop at the beginning of the game.
And against the Texans.
Same thing,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Against the Texans. It's the same thing. So it wasn't a surprise when you saw the Tennessee Titans do it. Because on film, they say, look, we can confuse Tyreek Hill, right? This kid is amazing of an athlete. But if we can confuse him a little bit, it doesn't matter how good Pat Mahomes is. Tyreek Hill's not going to be where he's supposed to be. That's why you start seeing Travis Kelce getting fed, against the Texans. Kelce got fed. You start to see Pat Mahomes run a lot. You know what I mean? Like we saw this 2 weeks ago or last week, he ran a lot because his wide receivers aren't diagnosing it. Cornerbacks or linebackers have their back turns. He goes and picks up 10 yards or 27 and a touchdown. All right, so that's the IQ of Pat Mahomes. That's why he's so good and so hard to defend against.
That's a great description, really. I mean, you laid that out and you mapped that out very well. And it's funny, as I was listening to you, I also thought about a recent documentary. I'm sure a lot of people saw this on Netflix, 89 Blocks. By 89 Blocks, as they chronicle the Flyers, the high school program in East St. Louis.
Yes, yes.
Have you had a chance to see this yet?
No, I saw the preview for it.
You have
but I haven't
to see
seen
this.
It yet.
No, you have to see this. AJ needs to see this. You guys need to sit down and see this together if you could do it. It's awesome. And as you're running through this and how, you know, some of the young quarterbacks are exposed to certain things and how others are not and how it accelerates their learning curve or really retards it.
Yeah.
I'm watching this program and their quarter is back then 2016, even though it just hit the airwaves now for Netflix. It chronicles the championship from a couple of years ago, and it's a real – I mean, East St. Louis is tough. I mean, it's really one of America's poorest cities. It's incredibly dangerous. But this program – and I'm forgetting the quarterback's name right now, but the program and the offense that they run is so complex. And I'm watching this, and as you're mapping out what you just mapped out, I'm tying it into the documentary that I just watched because – I'm not saying the kid's going pro. I'm not saying that. But it condenses – that learning curve, and you start to see things and how they manipulate things when they're 16 rather than trying to learn that when they're 19 or 20 or 22 and in the NFL.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And I don't think that East St. Louis Flyers, that program, while they're better than many, I don't think that they're unique necessarily. Maybe they have better athletes. Maybe they have better coaching, whatever. But I don't think their concepts are unique, to your point. So this is just permeated the lower levels of football.
Right.
So you get, 12, 13, 14, you know what to look for.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why we're seeing quarterbacks be able to come into the NFL, BT, and play right away.
Yep.
And not struggle. Right? Think about the early struggles of some of these really, like Peyton Manning struggled in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, what did he throw, 30 interceptions or something?
No, it was below 30, but it was in the 20s.
Oh, that's right, because Jameis Winston was the first one with 30. But it was a lot of interceptions.
Dan Fouts, we talked Dan, Terry
that's
Bradshaw.
Right. That's right.
A lot of guys, I mean, Eli wasn't that good early. A lot
that's
of these
right.
guys weren't that. Back then it was now, is it? Do you believe, by the way, because of the early influence in their in the mechanics, but more importantly, the visual aspect of their development, that if you're two-ish, definitely 3 years into right now as an NFL quarterback, if you're not showing the signs that it's easier to pull the plug now than it was 20 years ago?
Yeah, it definitely
is. Yeah, I would think so,
Look,
too.
Look, this is the Mitch Trubisky question, right? Mm. In Chicago. It's like, is this going to work out? He hasn't shown the acumen quite thoroughly enough yet.
Mm-hmm.
Should we pull the plug? Because some of these other kids, and maybe the ones that are coming behind them, like the Tuas or the Justin Herberts or whoever, they've got it. Like, we see it in college. Is it worth pulling the plug on some of these kids early? It's really interesting, like, how this has changed and how the position has evolved because of what kids are playing in high school, like the in their level of understanding, reads and decision makings has gotten much bigger. The other thing, BT, and we've mentioned this a few times, and I know it because I experienced it with AJ to an extent, even though he's not a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's these players that play baseball,
yep.
Right? There's an athleticism, like an arm slot athleticism,
mm-hmm.
that you don't have unless you play baseball. Right, because otherwise you're mechanically, like, I don't want to say stiff because that's the wrong word,
mm-hmm.
but you are
limited.
Like,
limited.
Well, yeah, you're limited because you throw it one way. It's
yep.
like it's up, it's shoulders up, you know, back steady, step into and throw it. Right.
That's right. That's right.
But baseball players are, their feet are all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, their body, you know, lean is tilted one way or another. There's a guy jumping in your face. You got to throw it underneath the runner who's sliding into whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you see these kids turn into quarterbacks in college and in the NFL.
Yep.
And they can make every single throw. You know what I mean? Regardless of what's happening in front of them.
Yeah.
And so, like, we keep saying it, but I really believe this. These baseball players that become football players
yeah.
turn out to be pretty good.
And I think
Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, yeah. And I think more so for the position players. Because,
yes.
Like, Jameis Winston pitched, you know, and he threw gas, right? But if
yeah.
you're a pitcher, you got two or three slots, fastball, curve, changeup.
Yep.
To Tiki's point, I know we got to get a break here, but to Tiki's point, I could be playing right field, right? There could be a bullet down the line. I could catch the ball, like Larry Walker just got inducted into the mm-hmm. Hall of Fame. It's just a visual, the highlight of Larry Walker, even though he's not playing football. But the ball down the right field line with his back turned to the infield,
yeah.
picking up a baseball, and then just firing, and, you know, whether it's the second, third, or home, or a cutoff man, boom. Or Russell Wilson, try to turn two. Guy's coming down on me. Guy's bearing down on me, sliding. Spikes high. I got to angle my arm low. I got to go up top. I mean, it really does create an ability to improvise that you can't practice.
That's right.
There's something there, too, and I totally agree with you.
Yeah, man.
And I really could. I mean, I couldn't play quarterback.
I mean, you know it. BT, you were the one that pointed it out to me.
No, I know.
With AJ, with his, like, one-handed catch and then shifting and throwing a touchdown
That's
in the
right.
championship game last year.
Yep, yep. I'm not happy AJ's giving up baseball, but
yeah.
I'm not going to get into that now. Maybe I'll try to coerce him back. All right, we've got coming up. Speaking of maybe pulling the plug, you know, quarterbacks in the NFL 2 years in, maybe get a sense they're not the guy. Should we pull the plug on the Pro Bowl? You know what? Should we just take a sledgehammer to the Pro Bowl? Just get rid of it. Should we? Tiki and I'll have that conversation coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. When you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote. Go to geico.com. Easy. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Getting ready to blast into the weekend here as we zoom toward the end of January. Tiki and I head out to Miami next week. And a ton of great guests already stacked up for you. Let me see, before we get to this Pro Bowl situation, inbounds, out-of-bounds coming up after mm-hmm. that. We already have, this is relatively new, Justin Herbert has been added by Samter from Oregon. Cam Newton, obviously, Ron Rivera, they were booked early. Cam Hayward, Arthur Blank of the Falcons, their owner. Shaq Barrett, the Griffin brothers, Shannon Sharp, and Jason Witten as well. So we got it all coming for you, as always. Tiki and Tierney in Miami, as we'll be out there for most of next week. All right, Tiki, so you have known me long enough to know
yep.
that, and by the way, there's two types of people who make it to my particular seat as a non-athlete. The guy who studied journalism and was intrigued by the art of conversation or writing or whatever, or the person who just dreamt of being an athlete. I'm actually both because I've always enjoyed conversing. But me, you know, my fuel was really, as crazy as it sounds now, believing that, you know, hey, maybe one day I could do what Tiki did, you know, or more specifically what Don Mattingly did or Chris Mullin. I love sports. And as a kid, there was nothing that I would rather do than get out in the street and play wiffle ball or play running bases or play home run derby or play horse in the backyard or two-on-two or one-on-one or, you know, football in the street, telephone poles, the touchdowns, the end zone. I say all this because I have consumed a lot of sports in my mm-hmm. life, visually, with my eyes, in person, both. Teak, I can't give you one. This is not hyperbole. I can't give you a single Pro Bowl memory in my entire life.
Yeah. Well,
not a single one.
I only have a couple, and that was because I was there. I mean, like I told you this before, BT, my last Pro Bowl, they like showed this like video because they knew it was my last game. I'd already kind of retired. And so it was kind of cool. The first one I went to was with Rondé. I wasn't in it. Rondé was in it. So that one was cool because it was our first time in Hawaii.
Yep.
But even the ones I went to, I don't remember a lot of it. You know what I mean? I remember like partying.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like drinking at the pool and,
yep.
and shooting the you-know-what with all the guys and stuff. But the games, they don't. Like they're meaningless in so many different ways.
But so are the other exhibitions. So is the NBA All-Star Game. So is Major League Baseball. I remember those.
But Major League Baseball, like you can watch the All-Star Game and you kind of feel like you're watching a regular game.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
In the NBA, similarly, but it's more just there's no defense, right? But it's still fun because it's intimate, right? NBA has always been an intimate sport. So even if you're just jacking around, you could be up at Rucker Park just shooting basketballs, but as long as there's stars there, like it's interesting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The NFL is not that. It's because they put on the pads, they look the part, but it's so slow motion and so like pointless, right? There's no real strategy. It's just kind of like, let's just have fun.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, they've tried so many ways to fix it. Like let's try to, you know, do a draft. And so it's not NFC, AFC. Let's just have, you know, captains and,
Dion.
And pick this and do all this stuff. And I think the only way to fix it, to be honest with you, BT, is to put more emphasis on skills. Right. And so that would mean offensive linemen. Yeah. Defensive linemen, you get voted into the Pro Bowl, but you know, you're not going to play. You know what I mean? You're just going to be sitting on the sideline, chilling, having a martini or a Mai Tai or whatever.
All right.
In Orlando, you're more like an umbrella.
Well, I think the old linemen are going to be swigging beers. I mean, so than having Mai Tais. But
whatever.
I got you.
And then do like a 7-on-7, like a competitive 7-on-7. That would honestly, without helmets on so you can see these guys' faces, that would be more interesting to me than watching a halfway football.
I mean,
right?
Yeah.
Because halfway football is not interesting.
No.
Right?
But neither is what you just described, with all due respect to
but
me.
But it's like, so for instance, I'll give you why I think this is interesting. So I don't know if you saw the dodgeball tournament.
I actually saw, yeah.
Right?
Jarvis Landry was phenomenal.
Dude, he's a stud.
He was good.
But it was interesting because it's like, there's like an intimacy to it because he doesn't have a helmet on. He didn't have a hat on or anything. So it's just like you see him. It's like it's Jarvis Landry. Like, oh, I know Jarvis Landry. And he's like this uber athlete doing crazy stuff that like not I would say you and I, but you and I, we were athletes. But you know what I mean? Like the kid in the backyard.
Sure.
Right. Would be doing. And it's engaging. And so they got to find a way to make the game engaging, because right now it's not. It's just like flip it off. You don't even want to watch.
Nah, man. I really like. Yeah, it's one thing to not be interested.
Yeah,
but I resist it. It's a weird emotion, and I have a theory as to why.
Go ahead.
Although I did enjoy the dodgeball as well. It was pretty good. Cam Hayward, who's going to join us at the Super Bowl. I believe he was the last one with Jarvis Landry. Landry was good, man. I mean, and I'm also back into dodgeball now because I'm teaching the kids how to play. Uh-huh. And I loved hammering kids. Back then, we would hammer kids in the face.
Oh, that's right.
You know, there was no punishment.
Right.
Now, that was the goal. You just try to mush people.
It always sucked when you had a too light of a ball and you'd like hum it and it just like would take off.
Sail on you, right?
It would sail on you.
Yeah. But my theory as to why I can only speak actually my theory pertaining to me, I don't know that this applies to anybody else, why I have no interest in the Pro Bowl is that, unlike being a basketball fan, and tell me if you feel me on this, unlike even being a baseball fan, I feel like being a football fan, while it's the best sport to be a fan of, nobody's going to really, well, some might contest that, but numbers would prove otherwise, it's also an arduous season as a fan. Like, you are committed.
That's right.
A lot of hours. And I know I'm not alone when I say that when I flip off that TV on Monday night to end the week, my eyes are a little blurry. I'm a little footballed out. I'm like, oh, I can use a couple days before I regenerate for Thursday and for tops and all that. And I almost feel like I've watched so much football. And there's an emotional, visceral response that goes with it, you know, that I don't want it until the Super Bowl. Like, I want a respite. I want to get away.
Yeah. No, it's funny because you said, like, think about your team. Like, if you, and we are kind of this way, but not always because we have responsibilities to watch all the games. Like, if you're just watching your team, and whether they win or lose, it's emotionally draining. You know what I mean? And so I get that to an extent. Like, watching a football game is different than watching a baseball game or a basketball game, because if your team loses in a basketball or baseball game, it's kind of just like, okay, but there's another one coming in a couple of days.
Correct.
It doesn't mean that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the emotional drain watching a football team, and then you start, like, calculating the repercussions to, like, what's the postseason chances now? You just lost this game, win the division. And, it's draining. Like,
yeah.
Mentally and emotionally draining to watch football. And so when the season's over, I hear what you're saying. If you're going to watch another game, it doesn't have any meaning, and is not even close to the game that you're watching. It's pointless.
Yeah, I mean, you empty the emotional, and some people empty the physical toolbox when you watch a football game. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time I threw anything. Maybe like a little Nerf football.
People still do that.
Oh, I know.
See,
trust me.
Social media all the time.
Oh, I know. But I think a lot of that is because they're going to be on social media.
That's a good point.
I don't know how organic that is, obviously, but I think that, you know, the yelling and the anticipation, and, you know, every time there's a ball that's 50 yards in the air, the groans and the grunts and the collective, is that a pass interference? You know, okay, do I see a flag? Oh, good, no flag. Good, good D, good. It's like you're on a 3-hour and 12-minute ride, 3-hour and 12-minute treadmill. I mean, it's really exhausting. So that's probably, again, I'm not here to denounce it entirely. The flavor of football doesn't really match my knee. I'm not into it. I won't watch 1 second. I won't bet it. But I'm certainly not going to begrudge those who do. I'm just going to watch golf instead. I'm going to watch some Big East basketball. I'm going to watch some Big Ten basketball. And I'm going to watch some golf. And I have no time for the Pro Bowl. I just don't. I don't have
time.
There
you go. And a lot of people agree with you, BT.
All right. Let's get to inbounds, out of bounds coming up. We've got this story on the Saints, which is a very complex and a very possibly alarming / worrisome one. We'll get to that. That headline's inbounds, out of bounds. But first up, Ack is here with an update. Here's Rich. This weekend, CBS's coverage of the PGA Tour season begins. Mentioned this before, with a fantastic field, including Tiger, who's red hot. I just saw it during the break on Twitter. Tiger has banged in birdies on 4 or 5 holes. He is red hot. He just rolled in a nice 12-footer. So Tiger's rolling. Rory, Phil, Torrey Pines compete at the Farmers Insurance Open. Coverage begins at 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific on Saturday and Sunday, and I'll definitely be watching some of that. Both days, the PGA Tour is on CBS. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Tiki, ready for a little inbounds, out of bounds, buddy?
I am. Let's get it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports, and often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, this is a pretty heavy story here. The Saints have, as we know, recovered as a franchise after Bountygate, but now could be involved in a different kind of scandal and a much worse one. So there's a lawsuit that's surfaced here accusing the team of helping the local Roman Catholic Archdiocese cover up sexual abuse allegations. Nearly 24 men suing the church allege that the Saints PR team and owner Gail Benson aided the Archdiocese. Oh, my God. My head is pounded. I'm sorry, guy. I know what it is, Mike. Trust me. I went to Catholic school for 40. I can't see straight. to cover up the crimes and assist with damage control. Now the Saints are going to court to prevent hundreds of emails between the team and the church from being released to the public, calling the accusations outrageous and the emails private and not fodder for the public. In or out? If the allegations against the Saints are true, the NFL must force the Benson family to sell the team.
That's a hard one, BT, but I'm going to say out of bounds. I don't think that this is to the level of conduct detrimental that this would kind of fall under. The Saints have obviously tried to be upfront about this, mm-hmm. and they've talked about their interactions with the Archdiocese. Gail Benson is obviously very close with the Archbishop of New Orleans. And what they've said, at least what they've admitted to, is yes, they helped, but they also helped display or at least put out a list of credibly accused clergy as well. So I think this is an example of a personal relationship crossing over into the professional realm of the New Orleans Saints. Mm. But I don't think that it hits on the level of stripping the family of the team, at least not yet. I'm going to say out of bounds.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about this that make you squeam. It's It's brutal. Putting the Saints out of it for a moment, but you know, this has been a problem that has been front page stuff for I'd say a good certainly this century.
Exactly.
You know, maybe late 90s it started to really infiltrate the public sphere. I'm going to say inbounds. You know, and I'm going to distinguish between a cover up and maybe directing them on how to handle this from a PR point of view. If it's, and I would want complete disassociation from both. I think everybody would. But if it was, hey, listen, you know, maybe this is the way to go about this from a PR point of view, that is different than, issuing some sort of advice on how to cover up a heinous sexual crime.
Yeah.
So if it is directly about a cover-up, then I'd have to say inbounds. To me, that is non-negotiable at that point. And I'm going to certainly, keep an even head about this and see where this goes, but... Now, I understand that you can say that the emails are private and they're not for public fodder. That's fine. But and I almost don't want to say this because I don't know that the Saints are hiding anything. But if they weren't hiding anything, I would be doing my damnedest to make them public, to get complete disassociation in the court of public opinion. So it's very complex. You know, people will latch on to one side, and the answer is probably somewhere in between. To be determined, but to not be evasive and answer the question, I'm going to say inbounds. If that's true, if it's a cover-up, I would say inbounds to this.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Teek. The NBA All-Star starters were announced yesterday with LeBron and Giannis garnering the most votes and will therefore be the team captains. So for the first time since 2016, Kyrie Irving will not be an NBA All-Star starter. It's Trae Young and Kemba Walker, the Eastern Conference guards, instead. While Irving's played just 16 games this year, Walker has only missed five. And has career highs in field goal and three-point shooting percentage. If you remember, anytime we compare Kyrie and Kemba, and really up until this year, there's been no comparison. Mm-hmm. It's always been about the difference in efficiency favoring Kyrie Irving greatly. You know, 3, 4, 5 percentage points in terms of being more efficient shooting the basketball, both from behind the arc and two-point field goal percentage. So that was the one difference. That was the main one. In or out? You would rather have Kemba as your starting point guard than Kyrie?
I'm going to say out of bounds, BT, and it's only because I'm going to make an assumption, and Samta didn't say otherwise. I want to make an assumption that there's another superstar on the roster with Kyrie Irving, because if you're going to have Kyrie and you want to actually compete for a championship, you need that other piece, right? And so given that, and even if they were both in the same situation historically, Kyrie Irving is just too good to match up or say he's not a better point guard than Kemba Walker. I like Kemba a lot, but Kyrie can do things that are spectacular. And yes, I know he's frustrating at times and he's inefficient this year, mainly because he's been hurt. I think he's trying to play through injuries for some perceptual reason. But I want to say out of bounds. I think Kyrie would still be my preferred point guard.
I'm going to say inbounds here. Again, there's no doubt that in terms of handle, just in terms of, just all the – it's Kyrie. You know, the way it's written, though, who would I rather have? And I've got to incorporate everything. And that's the stuff that, is not quantifiable through stats. Mm-hmm. That's chemistry. And Kemba Walker seems to be, going back to his days at UConn, certainly his days with the Hornets, universally revered in every locker room that he's in, whereas Kyrie Irving is a detached not really surly, but certainly quirky and unique personality that I do think has rubbed some people the wrong way. And it's not just in one situation. It didn't end favorably in Cleveland. It didn't end favorably in Boston. And let's face it, it's not off to a great start with the Nets. And I don't mean anything to do with their record. That's not good either when he plays. It's actually losing by a significant margin. But just in overall chemistry, his comments about the roster that you and I got into recently, I would say inbounds. If the talent is like, and I'm even starting to get to the point now because of the injuries with Kyrie, if the talent base were comparable and they were both relatively low, I think a year or two, definitely 2 years ago, but even a year ago, I would have said, Kyrie is so dynamic that I'll trust in him more to elevate, an otherwise average, uninspiring roster more so than Kemba. But if you can't play because you're not healthy and you can't answer the bell physically, which is becoming his M.O., I'll take the guy who's a lot more healthy and is a lot more liked. I'm going to say inbounds.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, baseball agent Scott Boras doesn't feel it's necessary. This is interesting here, Teak, for the Astro players to apologize for their culpability in the sign-stealing scandal. Boras told The Athletic, quote, "The coaches put this in front of us. Managers and coaches encourage you to use the information. It's not coming from the player individually. It's coming from the team in my stadium, installed with authority." End quote. Rob Manfred also admitted that the front office never forwarded the memo to the players about new rules restricting use of technology. Today, former Astros Cy Young winner Dallas Keuchel became the first to apologize, saying, quote, "It's just what the state of baseball was at this point in time. Was it against the rules? Yes, it was. Am I personally sorry for what has come about the situation? Yes, I am. It was not like every game we had it going on," end quote. In or out? Boras's points that the team is responsible for the scandal, not the player or players, plural, is in or out?
I'm going to say out of bounds of this. I think that Scott Boras, who is also reps Jose Altuve, is trying to protect his client from perception issues that are going to arise from this sign-stealing scandal. And I think Dallas Keuchel is smart because he's putting himself at the mercy of the public, basically. And once you do that, they forgive you. Trust me, public and fans, they will forgive you as long as you say you're sorry. What's troublesome, and this is why there's still this like ire floating around these Astros players, is that they're defiant because they have quote unquote immunity from this. But if they would just say, you know what, we messed up, people would forgive them. So I'm going to say out of bounds. I think they should. Scott Boras is just trying to protect his clients.
Yeah, I'm going to say out of bounds as well. There's an arrogance that's permeated the, you know, just the Astros
that's
realm.
Exactly
that,
right.
That is a turnoff. That is just a horrendous look. It's very poor PR coaching.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real gross, negligible inability to read the room. You got to be better than that. This one's easy for me. I agree. I would say out of bounds. And, you know, I'd like to see more players take the stance that Keuchel has taken. You know, I understand that there's still, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, but there's an integrity that still, you don't need to be read the new digital rules or the compliance to it to know that what you're doing is egregiously wrong and above and beyond normal methods of gaining an advantage. Out of bounds, Deke.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, so as we discussed yesterday, Larry Walker with Derek Jeter, now the only two modern-day players elected into the Hall of Fame this year. Walker announced that he's going to become the first player to ever to wear a Rockies cap into the Hall, though Walker spent the first 6 years of his career in Montreal.
I think with that, the years that I spent there, that it will be a Colorado Rockies hat that I'll be wearing to the Hall of Fame. It's a hard decision, being a Canadian, but I feel with all the at-bats, games played, everything that happened in Colorado, the year spent there, this really seems like the right decision, and we all agreed on that.
All right. So along with Walker on some of those other Rockies teams, you had Dante Bichette, who was a masher. Vinny Castillo, all he did was hit bombs. And, of course, Todd Helton. Now, in the same number of years as Walker, Helton had 14 fewer home runs but had more RBIs, more doubles, a higher batting average by a significant margin, and an almost identical OPS. So this year, he only received 29% of the votes, though, so there's something that's not congruent with that. I don't know what it is. In or out, Todd Helton should be a Hall of Famer.
I'm going to say out of bounds of this, BT, and it's interesting because Larry Walker, in a lot of ways, kind of cleared the path because of the Coors Field conversation, the thing that held Larry Walker back, but when I think of Todd Helton, yeah, the numbers are there, but I don't see him as this great player of his era, his generation. And there's so many other first basemen that had, I guess, far superior statistics. I want to say out of bounds. My gut is out of bounds, even though I think that could change, obviously, as we saw with Larry Walker as
yep.
well.
Now, and listen, and I respect that. I would disagree and say in bounds, but I don't think it's easy to come to the determination here. The one thing that I would submit is, you know, some of those first basemen that have those numbers, you know, like Giambi won an MVP, some of those guys were synthetically souped up, as we know.
True.
I look at Todd Helton as Mr. Rocky. I really do. To me, he's Mr. Rocky. Great fielding first baseman. Pretty good quarterback as well. It's not an easy slam dunk, but I'll say inbounds. Hour 3 coming up. TP and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.